This is Molly Storm from Stowe, Ohio, and you're listening to Barbecue Central.
Start the game! Let's go!
We'll do it live.
Okay.
Well, do it live! I'll write it and we'll do it live!
So to get that perfect barbecue, you use wood. Are you sure it's safe? Whatever. We put the lighter fluid on, strike the match, and... Oh!
Should we call the fire department?
That might be a good idea.
Welcome to the Really Big Barbecue Central Show. This is the show that talks about all things that are important in the world of barbecue and grilling. This show originating from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame city, Bomb City, USA, Cleveland, Ohio, the barbecue capital of the North Coast. I am your program host, Greg Rempe. Happy to have you aboard here on your Tuesday evening's Live Fire Fun and Frivolity Show. If you would like to get in contact with the show this evening, or you'd like to file the show during off-show hours, here's how you do all that.
You can get in touch with the show by sending an email to Greg at BBQCentralShow.com. Follow us on all the social media channels at BBQ Central Show. And be sure to subscribe to the show podcast feed on your favorite podcast platform.
Anything else you want to find out about the show can be found at the main website, TheBBQCentralShow.com. And here's what's happening in case you get the newsletter coming up in about 12 minutes from now. We are in a first Tuesday of yet another month, if you can believe it. We're here in May, 2024, rapidly coming to a close. Joining me in his usual segment, the pitmaster of Killer Hogs competition team and creator of How to Barbecue Right, Malcolm Reed, joins the show once more. On location this time, but don't worry, we got him all figured out here, and we'll be talking to him in just a few moments. And then 35 past the first hour, we tried to have him on in January when we did a sound check. Minutes before the show, it wasn't good enough quality, so we decided that we would reschedule. And rescheduling is tonight. Perhaps one of the most famous person we've ever had on the show ever. Andrew Zimmern joins the show. Bizarre Foods, for those of you that aren't necessarily huge Andrew fans, but for those that are fans, you know he's got a multitude of television shows that have happened, are currently happening, will happen in the future, books and James Beard Awards and the whole thing. So Andrew Zimmern, 35 past the first hour, then we'll move to the second hour. And since it is the first Tuesday of a month, but in the second hour, we have our pal Sam, the cooking guy, joining us. Open segment after that. We have some housekeeping items that we can get to, assuming we have time. And that's how the show's laying out. Malcolm Reed and Andrew Zimmern, first hour, and Sam the Cooking Guy, second hour. Don't forget, you can follow me socially, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Snapchat, and LinkedIn, all with the handle at BBQ Central Show. We say good evening to those of you watching the show tonight through one of our video streaming platforms. You can go to Facebook.com/BBQCentralShow or Twitter.com/BBQCentralShow, or you can watch it on Facebook, which is YouTube.com, or you can watch it on YouTube, which is YouTube.com/@BBQCentralShow, where we have a new YouTube poll question of the week, and we're asking everybody this, including all guests. How quickly do you expect to get a text message reply after you send one? And your options are as follows. 1 minute or less, 5 minutes or less, or no expectations of reply at all. And currently, 60% of you are saying 5 minutes or less is your expectation of getting a reply back to someone that you send a text message to. Honestly, I would love to say that I'm sitting in that no expectation at all, but when it comes to text messaging, because I always have my phone with me, I never know when I'm going to get a barbecue alert always ready to thumb out a message. Unless I'm involved in some nonsense where I can't do it, I'm minute or less guy. I'm 30 seconds or less guy. Unless there's something going on, then it might push to 5 minutes, but geez. Or after 10 p.m., there's a good chance I'm in bed. But in between the hours of 5 a.m. and 10 p.m., I'm good for a sub-1-minute reply. And it annoys me when I send out a text message because I'm not just trying to make chit-chat. Usually there's a point to my contacting somebody, so I want the minute or less reply back. But 67% now are saying that 5 minutes or less is where your expectation is on text message replies after you send one. The final results of last week's poll, lamb being the most underrated protein to go on the grill, 60% of you agreed with a yes, and 40% of you said no. And we start here this evening. Programming note, tomorrow, I mentioned it last week, I'm mentioning again here way less than 24 hours before it actually happens. Tomorrow, May 8th at 3 p.m. Eastern, we will be announcing exclusively right here on this show.
We'll do it live.
Yes, we will do it live. The top 10 finalists for the 2024 Barbecue Hall of Fame. Again, I went back into my research, and I believe this is the fifth year in a row that we're announcing something to do with the Barbecue Hall of Fame since the American Royal has taken it over. The first year, the first 2 years, it was just who makes it into the hall, but then we started also doing a show 2 weeks in advance of that, mentioning the finalists. So you would remember that in the beginning it was 9 finalists. They've extended it out to 10. So tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern, we will announce exclusively here on the show the top 10 finalists for the 2024 Barbecue Hall of Fame. And then 2 weeks after that, we will exclusively announce the actual 2024 class for the Barbecue Hall of Fame. That will be on May 22nd at 3 p.m. Eastern. So same time, May 8th, and then exactly 14 days later, May 22nd, both at 3 p.m. Eastern. You will learn first the top 10 finalists. Those names are going to be sent out to the living Barbecue Hall of Fame members. Currently, they vote, and then they vote for 3 of their favorites of the 10. And then the 3 with the most votes in total from the Barbecue Hall of Fame living members will make up the class. I'm sorry, I believe it's 4 now. They'll put in 4 living members. So 4 of the 10. You have a 40% chance if you're on that list that you're going to be going into the Barbecue Hall of Fame this year. Pretty good odds. I have a feeling I'm right around 0% chance. But I don't know who the list is or who's on the list, but I'm taking a guess. There'll also be legacy members that are put in on the 22nd. We don't have finalists for that. And then there may or may not be an impact award. All things that you will learn about tomorrow as we announce the 10 finalists. Also, so again, May 8th, tomorrow, as you listen to this on podcast, if it's after, you're going to have to get the announcement on podcast because it will go there after the fact. But in case you like the live show, if you're not doing anything in the middle of a work day, 3 p.m. Eastern, tune in on your computer at work. I'll help you pass 30 minutes. Helping me do those announcements, by the way, is Elizabeth Gunter. She made her debut last year after Emily Park took off. And then sitting in for what was a 2-year run of Robert Moss, giving us some background on folks, it'll be Amy Mills from 17th Street Barbecue and On Cue Consulting, who will be sitting in and giving a little bit of background on who the guests or who the finalists are. So we'll all learn together tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern. So stay tuned for that and put in your reminders on your schedule. Also, many, many of you weighing in on the Chris Young segment from last week in regards to resting meat. As predicted, about half of you think Chris is full of crap, and the other half is experiencing a revelation and will stop resting meat just because. Congratulations to the latter. Shame on the former. I see you're practicing your insolence skills and keeping them sharp. This was so much great information that was shared by Chris. If you haven't seen the video, go to his YouTube page at Chris Young Cooks and take a look at it. The things I took away are as follows. Resting steak just to rest without keeping track of carryover cooking will screw you in the end each and every time. And if you blindly assume that carryover cooking is going to max out at 10 degrees, you're screwed again. Also, it's okay to rest meat until you are approaching target temp, then be ready to cut into it to stop carryover cooking. And then lastly, you need to have some kind of a thermometer to track the internal temps as they carry over towards the target. Otherwise, again, you're operating blind. But the carryover is key. Crazy. Hey, guess what? We got a new sponsor of the show here on the Barbecue Central. Company you probably have never heard of before in your life, but you've seen their gas grills all over the universe. The company is Winners Products. And right now, they have a grill for sale exclusively in Sam's Club. So here's the deal. Winners is a manufacturer. So Sam's Club has contracted with Winners and said, hey, we would love to have X style of grill. We would love to have X features. We want to have this kind of value, but we want it coming in to retail at this price point. And now Sam's and Winners are working together, and what they've come up with is, quite frankly, in class, perhaps the best at price point in terms of value being put into this grill. Five burners that's got patented thermostatic control technology. So now you have two cooking modes that allow you to cook however you want. You want to operate it like a grill, you can do that. You want to operate it like a oven, you use barbecue mode. It's your traditional grilling experience with variable temperatures, giving you control of each burner to adjust exactly as you want on your terms. Or enter oven mode. Simply set the thermostatic control dial to your desired temperature, and your grill transforms into a precision oven. The choice is yours. By the way, you don't need to plug it in. You don't need to have an app for that. None of it. It's running on a similar technology as to what your oven does, except now it's on your grill. So you don't have to have power or a generator if you're going on trips. None of that. Just fire it up. You're ready to go. Members Mark Pro Series, only at Sam's Club, exclusively at Sam's Club. Members Mark Pro Series, I have the 5-burner. You're going to see some video on that. With the thermostatic control, now available at your local Sam's Club store and only at your local Sam's Club store. So don't miss out. We're going to have interviews with James Howe from Winners. We're going to be introduced to a whole other side of the industry you didn't even know about. It's going to be great. So we welcome them aboard, and if you are in the market for a new grill and you're a Sam's Club member, look at that Members Mark Pro Series, 5-burner and a 4-burner, both with that new technology. We're back with Malcolm Reed right after that. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Barbecue Central Show. Broadcasting live from the Barbecue Central Show studios in Cleveland, Ohio. You're listening to the Barbecue Central Show. Once again, here's your host, Greg Rempe.
Welcome back. This portion of the show being brought to you by CookinPellets.com, your number one source for quality wood pellets for all your pellet-driven cookers. You visit CookinPellets.com for more information or to see what else they're selling. And then when you're ready to buy, go over to Amazon.com or Lowe's.com or Walmart.com and purchase there. Same great products for sale, even better shipping rates than you can find on CookinPellets.com. It is the first Tuesday of a brand new month. And what does that mean? It means we have a visit from our pal currently enjoying 1.7 million YouTube subscribers as of 1 p.m. today, so I'm sure it's gone even more than that. We welcome back our pal Malcolm Reed. Malcolm, we have a YouTube poll question of the week that we're asking everybody, and it's this. How quickly do you expect a text message reply after you send one? Your options are 1 minute or less, 5 minutes or less, or no expectation in reply at all. Where do you fit it? Hold on, Malcolm. Is the thing flipped on there? There's a little power button there on the top. Just on the screen, there's a little gear cog looking thing. Just hit that. Make sure Samson Q2U is picked and then hit reconnect. That'll probably fix us here real quick. Malcolm's been hanging out in the green room for a long time. Let's hear it.
Are you there?
Yeah, here we go. Now we're all right. Yeah, I knew it would probably happen.
I've been on Go for a half hour sitting here just jamming out to the music.
Yeah, the same music on repeat, by the way. So you either like that song or you hate it. All right, So where were you on the text message thought?
I'm going to say I have no expectation. I'm probably unlike most people because I try to get back, but I know how it is. And there's been times where everybody sends text now, and of course, I'd love to get one right back, but I understand. I try to get back when I can.
So currently, the leader, 53%, 5 minutes or less, but it might be surprising to hear that no reply expectation at all is second place, 35%. So not too far away from first place. People watching can see that you're not in the usual How to Barbecue Right studio. So where are we finding you across this great land tonight?
Well, I'm over in traveled over to Roswell, Georgia today. You got me sounding good with this mic and these headphones.
It does sound good.
So I hope it sounds good on your end.
No doubt. Roswell, Georgia. So there's two things I know about Roswell. One, it sounds like there could be UFOs, but maybe that's a different Roswell. And then I think Royal Oak Charcoal is based out of there.
I'm definitely there for the charcoal. I hadn't seen any aliens yet, but I'm going to venture out a little bit after this podcast. So I'll get back with you next time on the aliens.
Over the course of your career, you've used probably every single charcoal that has come to market, if not almost every single charcoal. You have been, let's say, brand allegiant, or you've had a pretty good partnership working with Royal Oak here over the last handful of years. What do you like specifically about the Royal Oak brand?
Well, you can find it anywhere. That's kind of how I got on it. When I started Competition Barbecue, all the guys that were cooking, that were kicking my butt, were using a Royal Oak product. It was the Chef's Select or the Chef's Delight. And I started using that product probably 20-something years ago. But we always had the Red Bag Royal Oak was iconic. My dad used that when I was a kid. I remember seeing it around, and it was just what we had at our local stores. And I like the products, man. They've got some great stuff out there. They're really a great company to work with. They listen. They care about Competition Barbecue, but they're also in the business of selling charcoal to everybody cooking in their backyard. So, I like the company.
You had Nick Bauer from Primo Grills on your podcast that was released last Friday. Listened to it. Very good interview, by the way. He's been on my show a handful of times. We've talked about the direction of Primo during those interviews, and it's been fun to see a change. What's your take on him and where he's looking to take Primo in the future?
Man, he was an exciting guy to talk to because it was coming from a different voice. I know he's a corporate guy. They've been in the family business and owned companies for generations in the United States. Just to hear somebody young to come in and to have a take on barbecue and to see a grill, a brand, and want to get behind it, something that's, made in America. It's just a good product. And listen to him not be a barbecue guy, talk about barbecue and have some excitement in his voice. That was really cool.
Did you find it weird when he just, in a very vulnerable way, because he said it on my show too the first time he came on, and then he did it again when you were interviewing him, saying, hey, we own this company. I was chasing George, the original founder, to put a deal together for us to buy him because we wanted to get in the ceramic market. But I sat on my back porch for the better part of 8 months or 12 months or whatever it was, and I never used it because I was intimidated. I didn't know how to use charcoal. I didn't know how to do the vents and all this other stuff. It's like what everybody is worried about that talk to us and that seek our counsel. The guy that owned the company was one of those guys. I mean, that almost made me feel more relatable, but do you think that in any way that can hurt him going, I don't know how to use it?
Well, I mean, I think he's just honest and he's, mm-hmm. he's being, you know, truthful. I mean, he comes from a generation where they weren't cooking or, you know, with, he knew propane grills. And I think that's what the majority of America that doesn't follow what we do, that's probably what they think of barbecue or they think of grilling, and they think of a propane grill. It's a huge market. So when you see something where you've actually got to build a fire, think of it coming in from a novice level, Greg, never building a fire. It could be intimidating. I wish I would have told him that he should have watched some of my videos because then he would have had no trouble. But yeah. I wasn't that sharp. But, you know, I get where he's coming from, but I really appreciate the honesty. And what he was trying to get across to me was he started cooking on the grill because he was having his buddies come over when his wife was out of town. They spend a day grilling. He finally fired it up. He realized it's easy to do. And he realized that these grills are for anybody. Anybody can start a fire. Anybody can maintain the temperature on a grill and cook some really good stuff. And, you know, you don't have to limit yourself just because of a little fear.
I don't know if it was 10 years ago, but like when Big Green Egg really started to go into the competition scene fairly heavy, you had Dizzy Pig, like Chris Capel, Leanne Whippin was using Big Green Eggs, a number of them. A lot of guys were using ceramic cookers. But you also saw almost part and parcel some type of automatic pit temperature control device at that time. Everybody was using Barbecue Guru, Stoker's since come sure. out, and a bunch of other ones. Are you a fan / user of pit temperature control devices at all?
It's been a long time since I've used one. I own several. The Barbecue Guru was probably the first one I ever bought, and I was running it on a backwoods, vertical cabinet style smoker back in the day. And that's just what we use. And I even bought, when I got into drum cooking, I bought some adapters, and I was running a drum off one of the Barbecue Gurus. And then I found the Stoker system where you could run multiple pits off the same unit. So I thought it was pretty cool, but now it's very, I mean, those are great for getting sleep. If you're at a comp and you want to run your pit overnight, you want to walk away from it and not worry about the temps, they're great. But I just cooking it at home, man, I'm usually out there. I'll go check on the grill, see what's going on. I'm not really worried about if I get a little bit of temperature fluctuations. So it's not something that I use very often anymore. It's probably been, I bet it's been over 5 or 6 years since I've used one of those things.
Do you have a strategy with wood in a ceramic cooker versus, I mean, you run the gamut of cookers. So is there a different strategy that you use with the ceramic cooker and wood?
So I did a overnight butt just to try it out on my Primo the other day. And I'd use the same wood that I would use in a drum, and I scattered it around the fire pit where I built my fire, and I kind of had it staged. So as that charcoal kind of lit and burned slow, I would get a little wood smoke. And I just did a no-wrap butt on it, and it gave it – I was really surprised by the flavor that I got from it doing that. I probably used – 4 or 5, not even like half fist size chunks of wood. I didn't want to overpower it, but I think spreading it out in the fire and not building just a raging fire, letting that fire kind of slow minion burn across it, use the wood as it needs to for flavor. You can't go wrong.
Would you ever use briquettes in a ceramic cooker? Or you only have a lump cut? You have.
I have, just to see what it would do. I've found myself doing it more here recently just because I didn't have any luck at the smokehouse at the time. I forgot to bring some down there and I had to use it. But I haven't – the thing with – what I like about using lump in a ceramic pit, if I know that I'm going to do a fast cook, I'm going to put that fire out, I'm going to choke it off, you know, close the vents, kill the oxygen, that lump's going to go out. I can shift those ashes around with a little tool and light that lump right back up and get multiple cooks off that charcoal. Well, you're not going to do that with briquette. Once it hits the air, once you light it once, you put it out, it's going to absorb moisture. It's just not going to relight the same way. So I think that's your advantage over the two. Now, the briquettes burn hot. Everybody says, oh, lumps a much hotter burning fire. Well, these supersized roll-up briquettes I'm using, they get way hotter than lump, but they're a bigger, denser piece of coal, but you still can't put them out the same way you can lump. And I actually asked the Primo guys, do y'all, you know, is it lump only in a ceramic pit? They said, use whatever kind of charcoal you want. Hmm. We recommend lump because you can put it out, but it's not going to hurt that pit to run briquette in it. It's not going to break the pit or bust it or anything.
When I got the Primo, the first handful of cooks that I did on it, I used Kingsford to buck the trend because it was always lump in a ceramic cooker.
Yeah.
So I was getting good performance out of it, but what I ended up realizing was that on the longer cooks, there was still a tremendous amount more ash from a Kingsford product than I was getting on the lump. So inevitably, I said, okay, lesson learned. If I'm going to go fast and I only have briquettes, I can use it and I will suffer no ill effects. But going 10, 12, 14, 18 hours. I mean, you know, you can go 24 hours plus yep. on a load of charcoal in a ceramic cooker, depending on your environment. Wasn't going to make sense. So I've since reconverted back to only using lump in the ceramic cooker. And that's just my experience. But I do see more and more people on social media that have ceramic cookers just dumping briquettes in and having at it. So there must be something to it.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you're going to do a fast cook, like you mentioned, there's nothing wrong with using briquette versus lump on one. It's all about what you want to do. If you want to put it out, if you want to use some more of that coal, or if you want to get a longer cook out of it. I mean, really, to be honestly, Greg, I've been using a combo of a little bit of both. Mm. I'll put some briquettes in as a base. I'll put my lump on top. As it burns, I've got a good base of the briquette on bottom to hold that lump up. And it seems like I just get a more consistency. Even in my stick burners, the drums, I still do that.
It was a topic 2 weeks ago on my show. I asked the embedded correspondents this question. 100% yes or 100% no, you're shocked that Malcolm Reed is not competing in Memphis in May or Smokeslam. And 4 out of the 5 of us said yes. The person that said no was sit-in guest at the time, Sam the Cooking Guy, who gave a very insightful response as to why. But we all want to know from Malcolm, because what does Sam know? What gifts? Why pass on both this year?
Well, one, it's a pretty big financial commitment to cook one of them. And there's a lot of debate going on about which one you should go to. And man, I really haven't been cooking much comps. I mean, we've started mm-hmm. concentrating on sponsoring other teams. We've got a great group of ambassadors that go out and cook comps for we help them out. I mean, I'm not saying they're doing it for How to Barbecue, right? But we try to help them out the most we can. I know what it's like starting out as a team, so it helps to have somebody sponsor you a little bit. But it's just, you know, am I torn that I'm not there? Not really. I mean, I'm going to, you know, we've got a bunch of stuff planned in May for content, and I'm going to use that time to do a lot of other stuff besides just a competition barbecue. You know, I mean, it's always been my dream to win Memphis in May, and it may never happen, but I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. I promise you, because there's a lot of great guys out there cooking it, and I have, you know, I'm still having a blast doing what I'm doing and, you know, trying to help the guy that's cooking in his backyard.
Let me ask you a rub question, because we've talked about rubs quite a bit over the last handful of months as we've gotten in here to 2024. And I wanted to get your general thoughts because you're a superior maker and seller of rubs. So if you were going to hit the lab and make a new rub, you get it dialed in, and then you have to name it. Is there or are there any steps in the naming process where you research all the names of the rubs that are falling into the category that you're making the rub for instance, taco seasoning, barbecue rub, brisket rub? Is that part of the process at any point?
Man, I'm the horrible at name. I mean, look at my rub. It's called The Barbecue Rub. How great of a name is that?
You have El Gringo and you have, you know, all these.
Yeah. I put a little more thought into those, having some fun with the, you know, like Jam and Jerk and the green, you know, Grande Gringo, things like that. There's a lot goes into it. I don't know. That's probably way over my pay grade. It kind of just comes to you. You know, I'll think of something. Like if I'm making a new product, I'll float out a few names and see if anybody says they sound good. And if, I mean, a lot of times I get shot down with it, but it's pretty tough, man. Coming up with a name, it's hard for me. Mm-hmm. Now, I will tell you that what I started doing, ChatGPT, dude, using some AI to generate some names. Hmm. You can pump in some parameters. You can ask it for some names, and it'll spit out some stuff. And it may not be the one, but it's going to get those ideas flowing in your head, yeah. And so you can get somewhere with it. But I don't know if there's a right or wrong way to do it. It's just it comes when it's supposed to.
The barbecue rub, very popular. We all know this. Do you ever think about how many people have had the recipe reverse engineered? Or at least try to reverse engineer it so they can try and sell it too and ride a little bit of your wave.
There's no telling.
Everybody.
It's been on the market for what, 15 years, something like that. So it's, you know, I've had people send me copies. I've actually had co-packers tell me that someone sent the rub in to get them to break it down. And I just had a good enough relation with some co-packers for them to say, no, we're not going to do this because we know what this is. So, I think, you know, when it all comes down to it, all rubs are salt, sugar, you know, paprika, chili powder, and other seasonings. So it wouldn't be that hard to break one down and to do that. But, you know, if you want to do it, go for it. I've gave the recipe out before. If you go back and look at some of my old stuff, it's not like it's top, top secret.
Last question. And I appreciate the time here this evening. Have you ever thought about, and you're a very busy guy, so I have an idea where you're going to go with this, but have you ever thought about opening, or perhaps in a different way, have you ever been approached to license your name, image, likeness for a barbecue restaurant?
I've never been approached to it. I get asked often about what I do at a barbecue restaurant. And, you know, the whole thing about having a barbecue restaurant is you're tied to that restaurant. Mm-hmm. It's not a 40-hour week. It's a 120-hour week. It's hard work. It's low margins. If I could just cook barbecue on the weekends and give it to people or break even, I could see myself doing that. Licensing and all that, that would be pretty interesting. But I've seen so many of them where they have a great concept and they pay for a name or something, and then the restaurant falls flat because they're not running it up to the standard that you would want it to. So I would have to have a lot of say in how things, you know, not be maybe not be there every day, but have a say in the quality of the stuff that's leaving out of that pit, because your name is all you got. I mean, it really is. So I'd want the quality to be really high.
Go over.
Or it'd be a really good place to get cold beer.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably most important, even out of the barbecue, right? So go on over to the YouTube page and subscribe to Malcolm's channel if you aren't already. 1.7 million of you are. HowToBBQRight.com, the main website. Malcolm, always appreciate the time, and we will see you in June.
Yes, sir. Hey, I'm digging that shirt too, Greg. Rock that Pits and Spits.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Pits and Spits got me looking right. So we appreciate that. And appreciate Malcolm jumping in Roswell, Georgia. Left the friendly confines of Hernando, Mississippi. Andrew Zimmern is in the green room. He's ready to go. We'll get to him here in just 1 second. Before we do, we'll talk to you about Schwank Grills. If you don't know what Schwank Grills looks like, and you're watching the show, we'll just watch the screen because we're going to take a look at this stainless steel beauty. You're probably seeing it a lot on social media, the Schwank grills all over the place. So what do you need to know? The unit heats up to 1,500 degrees using infrared burner technology if you need it that hot. More on that here in a second. What does that mean to you? Now you can grill the juiciest steaks you've ever tasted in as little as 40 minutes? No. 10 minutes? Hardly. How about 3 minutes, depending on thickness? No more wasting your life cooking the proteins you want. Schwank Grills does it quickly and with great results. Now back to this infrared stuff. It's the same technology used by some of the most famous steakhouses in the country, including names like Morton's, Del Frisco's, Cut 432, just to name a few. And remember, at 1,500 degrees, you can build that delicious crust on both sides of the steak, and you're not overcooking it. It's incredibly juicy, incredibly flavorful, truly nothing like it. In fact, some are calling it the future of grilling. By the way, tremendously portable. And here in Cleveland, we're getting ready for yet another NFL season, as I'm sure the Cavs are getting ready to get swept by the Boston Celtics here in short order. But we have a tailgate season coming up. College football down in Columbus. Why not take the Schwenk Grill with you? You can do chicken, you can do burgers, you can do hot dogs, everything else. Not just steak. This thing is a multi-cooker. But you want a deal, and I'm here to give it to you. So go to schwankgrills.com, S-C-H-W-A-N-K, schwankgrills.com, and use promo code BBQCentral at checkout, and you can save $150 off any Schwenk grill, either the liquid propane or the natural gas. Yes, they have that. Of course, I would forget to close that off, so I would opt for propane. But whatever one you like, just use promo code BBQCentral at checkout, and you can save $150 off any Schwenk grill. Easy ways to find it: show notes and podcasts. You can go to the homepage and click on the Schwenk logo, and you can also find it in the newsletter that comes out every Tuesday. Good folks over at Schwenk Grills. Promo code BBQ Central. We're back with Andrew Zimmern right after this. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Barbecue Central Show. Howard Stern, Jim Rome, Dan Patrick, and Greg Rampey. The Mountain Rushmore of talk show entertainment. Now, let's get back to the Barbecue Central Show.
And we thank Malcolm Reed for joining us last segment. This portion of the show being brought to you by Fireboard 2 and Fireboard 2 Drive. You can monitor up to 6 different temperatures simultaneously. Connect to Wi-Fi or Bluetooth for monitoring. If you have any questions, you visit the website fireboard.com, or you call with questions, 816-945-2232, the good folks over at Fireboard. My next guest tonight might be one of the most popular names in food to ever appear on the show. Emmy Award winner, yes. James Beard Award winner, yes. Named a 50 most powerful person in food and a 30 most influential person in food, yes. Started and runs Kick-Ass Production Company, guested, judged, and or competed on all the most relevant food shows and contests in the past 10 years or so. He's also the host of the very popular Wild Game Kitchen and soon to air Field to Fire. I am happy to welcome first-time guest Andrew Zimmern to the show. Andrew, appreciate you making time here on your Tuesday. Before we get into the nonsense, we have a more nonsensical YouTube poll question of the week that we're asking everybody, including all guests, which is this: how quickly do you expect a text message reply after you send one, and your choices are 1 minute or less, 5 minutes or less, or no expectation of reply at all?
No expectation of reply at all.
Really?
Yes, it is my biggest pet peeve in the world is someone texts me and 15 minutes later, I get like 3 question marks and a hands up WTF emoji. And I literally pick up the phone and tell that person, don't ever blanking use this number again.
Wow. Well,
it is crazy to me. I'm old. But I remember when email came around and everyone said email is going to liberate us from the slavery of writing letters all the time. Mm. At that point, I think I wrote 5-6 letters a week. You know, people picked up the phone and they called someone.
Yeah.
And now it's the same thing with email as it is with texts. I get someone sends me an email and 2 hours later is like 3 question marks and the WTF hands up emoji. And I'm like, oh my God, aren't people like working and doing stuff? And we just expect these days in our society geared around instant gratification, you know, grills have to cook quicker. Not a knock against Schwenk. I just think it's just that expectation. Whereas for me, cooking is a yoga. If you tell me this takes an hour or that takes 2 hours or this takes 10 minutes, whatever, I want to enjoy that time. And I want to enjoy my lack of having to text someone back right away because I'm not a slave to their questions.
57% of people are saying 5 minutes or less, but shockingly, 35% are in second place saying no expectation of reply at all. So we'll see how that tracks for the rest of the show.
That's nice. I like that. Solid third.
Yeah. Let's talk about TV shows before we get into some other topics. So I had mentioned in the open, Field to Fire, which is going to be the debut season, is coming soon. And then you're going to have a season 4 of Wild Game Kitchen. So let's start with the latter first. What are you doing this time around that keeps the content fresh for the fans of the show, but also keeps you interested in producing content?
Oh my gosh. Ask me in 5-7 years. I mean, 10, 12 seasons in, you start to get wondering about what you're repeating or how to do something in a different way, or maybe a different technique on a similar piece of meat or fish or critter, as the case may be. But I think, even when we were doing Bizarre Foods in its heyday, we were doing 32 to 35 episodes a year.
Wow.
We didn't have a story problem. We could have gone on for another 20 years. I think the food world and the way people cook changes enough that 5, 6, 7 years later, you can come back to new content. And these days, I mean, people are lucky to get more than 10, 12 new episodes a year of a given show, because everyone has now reduced their order number pretty much across the board. So I think we're going to be just absolutely fine. I mean, I probably have another 100 recipes that I want to do, main recipes that are the tent pole of each half hour. So that's another 8 seasons of 12 episodes a year, if we're lucky to get that far, and I hope we are.
We're going to talk a little more TV here in a second, but I'm just wondering, from an order standpoint, is it year to year? Do you sign multi-year contracts to get shows typically, out, depending on who's carrying it?
Yep. Typically multi-year deals with a certain number of orders per season. Now, that always changes if the show is doing really, really well. Right now, we're in a really lucky position with Wild Game Kitchen. I think we'll be in the same position with Field to Fire, in that we have primary and secondary streaming rights sold to that show. And so our secondary partner, which is Tastemade, which gets to air the shows after they have had their premiere drop on Outdoor Channel, may actually choose to order more all on their own, because it's such a crazy hit on Tastemade. We're very lucky. Outdoor Channel is in 42% of American homes. Tastemade, everyone's used to it being on their, it's a platform, right? And so while all the traditional networks, even cable channels like Outdoor Channel, are offering their product online, digital format, people are still getting used to that. And I think with something like Tastemade right out of the box being a different style of platform, I think lends itself to people doing a lot more viewing.
When you were in the heyday of Bizarre Food, and now we sit here beginning of May in 2024, is it easier to do television now because of so many outlets, or has the talent pool diluted?
That's one of the most intelligent questions anybody has ever asked me, and I could spend hours talking. I've waited 20 years making TV for someone to ask me about the dilution of talent in a world where you have so many offerings and so many channels, and most importantly, everybody can be a creator simply by putting video on their IG platform or YouTube or wherever it might be, right? And, more people have seen, I could pick any one of 500 different names out of, on my phone, of people who, whether it's on TikTok or Instagram or YouTube, have more views in a week than Bourdain and I had combined on the best Monday night when we were back to back and both on Travel Channel in linear TV. So I think it's both been fantastically democratic and liberating, and I'm all for it. I think the more talent, the better. I think it, at a certain point, the audience tells you we've had enough, right? You start to see numbers go down, and now the data can be crunched so quickly off of those platforms. I think it's really marvelous. But I do think that we are in the middle of a a time in television where there are a lot of people, you know, on who tick a whole bunch of boxes, except for the one that says really talented audiences want to tune in all the time. And it's ironic because as someone who actually seeks out talent and tries to put new talent in new shows and package them for buyers, you mentioned that I own a production company here in Minnesota, Intuitive Content, an incredible group of really talented folks. We feel both sides of it. On the one hand, there are too many people that are out there. On the other hand, looking for genuine stars who are capable personality-wise of carrying their own show, and where the audience says, I can't wait till the next episode of that drops. I'm going to tune into that woman or that fellow. It's few and far between still.
All right, we're going to chase down this rabbit hole. So, like, how do you recognize the star? Like, my parents tell me all the time, oh, you should have been on radio. People are missing your talent. They don't see the gold that you are, because they're good parents. But as somebody who sees talent all the time or potential talent, when does your bell ring?
I use the same litmus test that viewers use. When I turn that tape off, if I can't wait to see them again on whatever it is, whatever the platform is, however I've seen them, sometimes it's tape they've sent us. Sometimes it's links to their own YouTube channel or Facebook account or wherever they're putting their talent up. If I can't wait to see them in something, sometimes I know right away. We have several people that we've done shows with and are continuing to do shows with. One is a very famous baker named Zoe Francois. She walked into my kitchen 25 years ago in a restaurant in Minneapolis. I wasn't even doing TV at the time. And she was so energetic and so fresh. I immediately thought this woman is going to be a huge star. Same thing with Ellen Marie Bennett, who owns the kitchen goods and apron company, Hedley Bennett. I met her about 15 years ago and I was in television and I told her flat out, I said, you need to do TV. And we have a show. I knew right away she'd be a big star. And it's taken me that long to convince someone else. But we have her new show called Kitchen Glow Up, where she goes in and renovates people's kitchens and sort of helps them organize their food life. It's a wonderful half-hour show for the design build crowd. And that launches on Taste Made the first week in June. And I'm really excited for people to see her. I think that's going to be a monster hit.
All right, so we could talk about talent all night, but that's not what we're here for. Tell me about Field to Fire. Like, what can we expect from that?
Well, the original Wild Game Kitchen had a very simple premise. Andrew goes out into the field, out on the water, foraging, wherever he might be, hunting, fishing, gathering, and heads back to the cabin and cooks up the food over live fire. And outdoor was not the network that they are now. This was 5 years ago that we first started talking to them. I think they've seen that, you know, sinking a little more money per half hour or viewer minute is worth it. But they dipped their toe in the water and they said, you know something? The budget's a little too big with multiple days of shooting us out in the field, then back to the kitchen. Let's see how it goes just in the kitchen. And it's done really well and exceptionally well on Taste Made. And so it's been a great success. We're really thrilled about it. But last year, they said, hey, we see the numbers and the Outdoor Channel audience watching a half hour of cooking is a new adventure for them. Let's split the difference. Let's go back to that original idea and get you in the field and then going into the kitchen. And so rather than just changing the content wheel on Wild Game Kitchen, they said, let's keep that as it is. Let's rebrand it as Field to Fire and get you out in the field first. So I think audiences who want to see the hunting and fishing, the foraging and see me having a literal blast sometimes with folks all around the country, out in a boat, or, you know, knee deep in my waders, or, you know, up in a deer blind. I think you're going to have a lot of fun with this show. And then, of course, the animal comes back with us to the outdoor kitchen.
When does that air or start?
We don't have a date yet. Okay. I'm assuming, like the last 3 years of Wild Game Kitchen, it will be the last Monday in September.
What's the most uncommon wild game you've cooked?
Wow, the most uncommon. I would have to say the giant African porcupine in Botswana. These are for anyone who's a big fan of classic movies, this is a rodent of unusual size. Princess Bride sub-reference. They're about 75, 80 pounds. They have huge quills, very long. They go down into these burrows, these little underground cities, and the Juntwazi, the tribal people of the bush down there, actually go headfirst down into these holes with a spear the animal, and then, like a human ladder, once the animal is speared and dead, other tribal members, usually young teens because of size, go down and sort of extract each other one by one out of there. So the last person pulled out is clutching this giant thing by its feet. The fat that is underneath the quills, but on top of the muscle meat, is about an inch and a half thick carpet. Wow. That is like bacon. It's just fantastic. It's like pork belly. And they dry the meat and they dry the bones for using in soups and braising later. They use the quills for jewelry and for tool making. Mm. And the first thing you do is eat this fat cap blistered on the charcoal. It's unbelievable. Absolutely delicious. But when they hauled that animal out and said, yeah, this is what we're going to eat, I did not believe it.
They didn't want you to be part of the human ladder for ultimate experience.
No, I was too round. I was too round for the human ladder. You know, everybody always says right away, there's a famous scene where we ate these giant fruit bats that had like a 7-foot wingspan, and we cooked them over coconut husks on an uninhabited island in the Samoan chain down in the far South Pacific. And that was a crazy day because we almost died in the boat. And, you know, there was wild ginger that we crushed up with stones and poured the ginger juice all over these bats. And because these bats only live on this island and they only eat breadfruit, the natives have learned that you can eat the whole thing, the entrails, everything. Oh. There's no part of this bat you can't eat. But it's a monstrous looking animal. I mean, they're called flying foxes for a reason. They're like 7-pound bats with 7.5-8-foot wingspans. That was pretty strange. Giant anacondas in the Amazon were pretty strange. But I'm going to have to give it to the rodent of unusual size in Botswana.
As you survey the everyday family, are you generally encouraged or generally discouraged on what kind of culinary skills are being imparted into the youth?
I think more people should know how to cook. I think it's a yoga. I think it provides, it's a skill that you'll use on your own. You can use it to bring others joy. I think that, you know, there's a reason that the culinary arts have attracted such a large percentage of people. I mean, remember, you know, just independent restaurants alone are 5.5% of GDP. That doesn't even fold in all the other places that we touch food, from bowling alleys to hotels to other types of tourism. I think a food life and a developed food life is as important as mathematics or music in terms of a cultural totem. And I mean, look, if someone takes your quadratic equation away, I don't think you're going to fight them off with a stick. if you try to take the mixtape I made for my girlfriend in college, I may have a problem with you. But if you take away food, that's the stuff that revolutions are made of. You know, blood runs in the streets when there's no food, literally, and has historically, you know, since, you know, we've been painting on caves, predating that. So I think food is really important. I think as a cultural touchstone, I don't think anything even begins to approach it.
If we talk about beef here just for a few minutes, everything to me is always like 3 or 4 years ago, but it's been longer than that. So as I'm coming up, it's choice grade. I don't even know if I remember prime grade even going up. I'm getting ready to turn 50 in July. But you know, over the last handful of years, we've seen prime grade become run of the mill. It's a name people know in every house. So is Wagyu or Wagyu or however the fuck you say it. And then there's the A5 is coming over from Japan. It's been a meat explosion. So what's your take on quality of meat available to the everyday consumer right now?
Well, sadly, I don't think the everyday consumer can afford 99% of the high quality meat that's out there. I think eating well in America has become a class issue. And so I think what's happened over the last decade is you've seen the greenwashing and the mass marketing of a lot of meat brands. So much in the same way that a term like organic 25 years ago was like, oh, it's organic. Well, it's really meaningless when you have to pay for the certification. We all know that what we wanted was a farmer, raising food fit for human consumption with his own family, maybe a couple other folks on a small piece of land. And you know, you'd stop at the, you know, on your way home and, you know, fill up a bag of corn and tomatoes and cucumbers and peppers and leave, you know, whatever money you could in the tin cup that was left there for people, because there usually wasn't someone there minding the shed. We have this idea that somehow all food is like that, and it's not. You know, when I saw the, you know, certified Black Angus thing explode, and I'm like, you know, that's just kind of like a made up thing, right? I mean, it's not an actual government grade. It's not an indication of quality. You can have really good certified Black Angus. You can have really crappy certified Black Angus. And the same thing with a lot of this overpriced stuff. So if you call something Wagyu or Kobe beef or use some Japanese nomenclature on it, you can charge $40, $50, $75, $200 a pound, right? And it's I find it really offensive. I'm very famously all about food justice in this country. I think we have too many people that don't know where their next meal is coming from. And I find the fetishization of these very expensive cuts of meat or breeds in some cases, and the over-marketing of food to be saying that's really dangerous, and quite frankly, I find it insulting. I think we just need to understand that good is good. It's in the eye of the consumer. Some people may not enjoy a steak that's a little tougher. Other people are raised on beautiful grass-fed beef that is just naturally a little chewier, but has amazing flavor. And perhaps they're used to doing a lot of different things with it than just throwing the luxury cuts on the grill and charring it to medium rare. I have a real problem with the marketing of food, because I think food is such a vital thing for human beings to rely on. And the minute you throw the term marketing in, which sadly everything relies on that. And by the way, I fully concede that I am, when I talk about the problem and I illuminate solutions as to how to fix this situation in America of 2024, I fully understand that I am part of the problem. And when I say me, I actually mean me and a lot of my other colleagues, because when it comes to fetishization of food, I think we look at people on TV who make a lot of food shows, and I've been lucky enough to make 15 of them, 18 of them in the last 25 years at a pretty high level. Mm-hmm. And so in some way, probably a demonstrable percentage, my colleagues and I who have enjoyed the same lengthy careers are probably as much of the problem. And it's probably why we're fighting so hard to find solutions because we desperately need them.
We've seen prolific growth in the live fire industry, especially during the COVID era. As you travel around the country, where do you think the popularity of barbecue restaurants is? And where do you think the popularity of live fire in the backyards of homes is right now?
I think it's growing and will continue to grow. I think that for the weekend warriors, the hobbyists, the once a week home cooks, and certainly for professionals like myself, the challenges implicit in cooking a piece of meat or fish or vegetables over or poultry over live fire is what attracts me to it. The variables, you know, type of fuel. Is it windy? What's the temperature out? Mm-hmm. What type of device are you cooking on one day or using a different device the next day? What's the humidity out? Did you let your meat come to room temperature? What's is the size of that pheasant or elk chop or steak from the supermarket that you bought for a Saturday night meal for your family? Is it the same as it was the last time you hunted for it and cleaned it or shopped for it? I just think the variables are really exciting. It's why I decided to get into you know, these shows, was because I'm an outdoorsman. I love it. And I thought, you know something? People really dig this. And I'd like more people to cook outdoors. I think it's a ton of fun. And I think it's something you can share with your whole family. You know, then there's, you know, it ticks every box for me. I mean, you've got the equipment that you get, you know, the fancy shirts like you have on. You have everything else that goes along with it. I think people are really excited about it. I by the way, I don't want to, you know, go all crazy on this, but there is something very firmly rooted in our DNA as human beings, taking a meat, dragging it back to our cave and throwing it over fire. I mean, we've been doing that for as long as we've been doing almost anything. And I think it's I think the results speak for themselves. I'm surprised it took this long. I think convenience came in there. You know, everybody wanted to turn on an oven, put it at 400 degrees and throw a turkey in, right? Now you have a lot of options, and I think it's great.
It's been worth the wait. Your insight has been incredible, and appreciate your candor. AndrewZimmern.com is website. Follow him on social, Chef AZ, across social media. Andrew, really appreciate your time this evening. Thanks so much for coming on.
Oh, I appreciate it. You have a great night.
Thanks. Andrew Zimmern right there. It's Field to Fire. That's going to be the new show, maybe at the end of September. And then what will be season 4 of Wild Game Kitchen. So if you're a fan of Wild Game Kitchen, you know where to grab that show. Outdoor Channel, I believe. Did it used to be Outdoor Cooking Channel? Probably not. Outdoor Channel. That doesn't resonate with me because I'm not typically outdoors being a man.
Get that big stuff out of here.
All right, so the clock is, as we call, jacked in the industry here, but luckily we're not abiding by FCC regulation. So now we're going to play catch up. So for everybody that hates it when you hear the ads, get ready to hate. Because the people that sent me this shirt, as you can see right there, Pits and Spits is who we're talking about now, because you're tired of settling for mediocre grilling experiences, aren't you? Yes, you are. Step your game up.
Step your game up.
Bring the ultimate flavor and cooker to the backyard barbecues, for crying out loud. Pits and Spits Charcoal Grills, offering the highest quality live fire cooking experience you can get in the market today, using either wood or charcoal. The solid fuel grills produce those classic flavors you're looking for when you have the time to fire up the grill and cook for family and friends. With a large adjustable fuel tray, you can raise and lower the fire to control and fine-tune the heat. their take on the very popular Santa Maria style grill. You can check them out at pitsandspits.com/BBQCentral. And you can use promo code CHARCOALCENTRAL, all one word, CHARCOALCENTRAL. And you can take $150 off any charcoal grill that they sell when you use the code. Again, the website, pitsandspits.com. That's the double T on the pits and the spits /BBQCentral. Promo code CHARCOALCENTRAL for $150 off any charcoal grill. We're back to wrap the first hour. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Continuing to produce incredibly mediocre content in an exceptionally professional way. You're listening and watching the Barbecue Central Show. Once again, here's your host, Greg Rampe.
Okay, then now we're back. We thank Andrew Zimmern for joining us on the show. His personal website where you can link to everything, andrewzimmern.com, of course. And then I know a lot of his handles are at Chef AZ, Andrew Zimmern, Chef AZ. So we certainly appreciate him stopping by and giving us some extended time. I could have won another 45 minutes, I would say, easy. But it's not this kind of show. We're a live show. We got other guests, right? But we kept him around a little longer. I appreciate him sticking in there. All right, let's move to the second hour where it will be an abridged open, and then we will have Sam the Cooking Guy. So stick around. We'll be right back.